All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. Agenda item number 3, great presentation on the concept of the Webster Avenue streetscape plan. This has been a project in the works to help identify, please.
All right.
What the future of Webster Avenue can look like. Ready to be impressed.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, guys. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Eric Schmidt from Grape out of Milwaukee. And as you have seen in some previous meetings, so about a month or so ago, I know Craig has brought some of the preliminary layouts and drawings for what we had on the ground. But in general, this process has been pretty exciting to see the fact that, you know, through the planning and the corridor study, the neighborhoods and constituents came out and kind of voiced their opinion that we want to make this, you know, kind of a memorable village downtown center, a commercial district, and Webster Avenue seems like a great logical place. So it's great to see you guys kind of stepping up and, you know, in engaging us to help develop the vision and create a master plan and let the games roll. There's a lot of moving parts. There's, you know, a lot of design work to come, but it's kind of the beginning fun part for us to sort of develop the vision and explain, you know, the juicy bits and pieces and kind of help get everybody excited about the project. So in general, the master plan is it's a conceptual design based on lots of assumptions. You know, we're not anywhere near final engineering, but the intel we got out of the staff and Craig's group, you know, the time we spent out in the field just kind of assessing what's there, and our experience with other really similar projects, we're bringing some of the better ideas and exciting finishes and things like that to the table. So without further ado, I just wanted to kind of walk you generally through the plan and identify the key concepts and things. And I understand you each have a hard copy to sort of follow along, take notes, ask questions whenever you feel appropriate. But I'll just kind of walk you through the design, starting with some of the key pieces. But before we get into the streetscape and amenities improvements, there's a lot of vertical clutter in the sky today, the overhead power lines. There's a lot of money and infrastructure work involved as part of what would be a piece of the steps in turning this into something, you know, the most memorable, the most meaningful, the best looking, obviously. But that's probably the most expensive item you'll run into. So working with WPS and what those costs are and budgeting for those, as well as the, you know, actual roadway engineering as this project moves forward. But in general, we've maintained all the access vehicular into all the parcels, the commercial districts. The medians are generally the same. The curb cuts, the turning areas are all the same. But we're proposing, you know, landscape improvements throughout those areas and maintaining some of the long linear medians in as much as possible. And I'm going to grab the laser pointer and just start kind of poking at things real quick. Yes.
Oh, yeah?
I may just run up there and point and wave my arms. That's what I do anyway. So, working from I guess south to north, what we're showing at the key intersections, that would be mostly where there's current signalized intersections. We're showing areas of accent paving at the corners in larger blocks to sort of introduce the corridor, sort of reinforce the fact that you're coming into this pedestrian-friendly district. The materials, the finishes, the colors, the pavements and things start to translate into something more exciting than your standard, obviously. So part of doing that is including certain areas at the corners, reinforcing pedestrian safety by identifying crosswalks with either colors or textures, different types of paving or pavers. We're not promising any one type of improvement in terms of materials, but what we wanted to do is provide kind of a visual summary of the possibilities. And the ultimate plan that we kind of provided some initial pricing and numbers for reflects the, you know, we always start with, here's the best design, the Cadillac level, if you will, but there's always flexibility and room to work with the numbers, with materials and pricing and alternates, and, you know, obviously budgets are real, and the money tree is only so happy. So we can certainly, you know, provide information or work with the staff moving forward on dialing up actual costs and things like that. So roadway intersections are kind of my first key point on identifying A points of entry into this district, and then what happens within the roadway terrace, which is the area between what is the sidewalk and the back of curb. 4 to 6 feet is usually where that ends up. In this scenario, the roadway right-of-way is being widened to 92 feet, and that's the existing, Craig, is at 88, is that correct? I at the top of my head, I can't recall, but by widening that roadway, we're keeping the same general lane configuration. There's anticipation of some bike accommodations with a four-foot, you know, kind of identified lane. It's not going to be an official bike lane per se, but that's all part of the study. And the WISDOT has about 12 different designations you can bring a bike accommodation into your design with. There's full-on striped bike lanes and signage, but those need to be, I think, a minimum of 5 foot wide. If you go with 4 foot or 3 foot, you can identify with sort of a shy stripe, and it becomes a bike accommodation is generally how they term that. But so bikes are in the mix. The pedestrian terrace areas, the sidewalks are pulled back. I know with the existing condition, the sidewalks are all attached to the back of curb, so you're that much closer to vehicular traffic and potential conflicts, and just, I think, a general cognitive interpretation of safety, just being that much more removed from the street, helps develop that pedestrian kind of character and feel. Street trees, that's an obvious improvement in any streetscape, in my opinion. And in this case, we're showing them in, you know, about 4 foot by 10 foot precast curb planters with some decorative low metal railings around them to kind of keep people and things from being in them and out of them. But it's kind of another level of aesthetic that adds to the palette of furnishings and amenities that you see along the street. So the rhythm of street trees and then new roadway lighting is kind of established. And in this case, we've assumed a general spacing based on the general type of lights. There would be WPS provided, the roadway Cobras, and they would match the Hoffman Street fixtures, which on my second page are images and pictures of all these things I'm describing. So I don't know if that's worth me flipping back and forth to kind of show those things as I'm talking, but we have photographs of what the precast planters and decorative fences look like, the different types of accent paving alternatives, the different types of furnishings and things. And there's a picture of what that Cobra light is over on the adjacent neighborhood. But without getting into too much detail first, I wanted to just generally sort of walk through the types of improvements. But now the second board is really the pictures explain it best. They're thousands of words each, and you guys get the idea. So medians, roadway lights are new and rhythm, and you'll see in areas along the west side of the road, the cemetery, there's a portion of the road where we're not impacting or widening or doing anything and keeping that existing sidewalk, mainly because the 92-foot would, it's just not possible to encroach further into the cemetery area. So that block in particular is kind of being held off in its existing condition. So the paver, the accent paving in the terrace, the trees march down, the street tree planters would be planted with some ornamental grass or some low-maintenance, easy-growing perennial just to kind of add a little pizzazz, but ornamental trees are kind of shown in red, shade trees, parkway trees, street trees, the larger green, and then the plantings within would, and I should say the existing meetings have wonderful annuals and great plantings where it's possible, so that's definitely part of, you know, maybe the annuals get plugged into the noses of these islands and more perennial and shrub material gets filled in, but it's really an attempt to kind of glorify this nice parkway we're creating. Separations, pedestrian spaces, and in areas where the adjacent land uses aren't as retail or commercial oriented, we're just keeping it a turf lawn, simple, kind of a nice parkway feel, but where there's where's that commerce, where the commercial activity really is where we're proposing the decorative paving in the terrace areas versus a turf lawn terrace treatment. Let's see, we can pan down to the middle.
Eric, what are you proposing for terrace widths and sidewalk widths?
Okay, on the second page is a cross section, the typical 92 foot. We're showing that at a 6 foot wide pedestrian terrace and then a 6-foot-wide pedestrian sidewalk. So the trees and planters would be wide enough to get enough growing media and root mass, but there's also other ways to achieve that with structural soils beneath the sidewalk pavements and things to allow roots to grow. And you pay enough money for the trees, you want to make sure they have what they need to survive and thrive. So that's it's great technology that has come along.
And how about the sidewalk by the cemetery?
I believe that exists at 5 feet. I don't know that off the top of my head. I don't know if anybody has a gander. 5? Okay.
And you're proposing it stay that way?
That's correct. Without having to impact that curb or sidewalk or push anything further. So I think it was back to the 88-foot right-of-way at the south portion. That's the number. So 92-foot, and that's the typical. So that's what we're showing in the second board.
So 92 feet gives you bike accommodations on both sides of the road.
Correct. And we're showing them at a 5-foot width. So there's a number of ways to stripe or notate and all that stuff. So, and the actual design of that stuff will get flushed out through final engineering, coordination with WISDOT and their standards, and the way they run their projects. So we're showing, and I guess I should just take you across, 6-foot sidewalk, 6-foot planter, 5-foot bike accommodation, we're calling it a striped bike lane, 11-foot drive lane, that gives us, I think that left us with an 8-foot wide median and then 2-foot curb and gutter on each side, so that's a nice ample width median for the trees and landscape, and the same goes as you move over to the other side, 11-foot lanes, 5-foot bike, it just mirrors itself across, so we worked through a few different scenarios with Craig and the staff on median widths or terrace widths and things, and this is where we felt it fit best with the corridor and still provided all the ingredients that we were looking to add. But obviously it does involve purchase of additional right-of-way to acquire enough space to fit that 92 feet. So that's, I think, the other part of developing a master plan is to help, sell these ideas and generate the interest and funding and all that good stuff. So I'm glad you asked that. That was a great lead into me walking you through the cross-section. Just moving our way further down through the road. St. Joseph's, another kind of a key intersection where we're having some accent paving where some of the smaller dots and blobs and hoosits are bike racks, trash and recycling receptacles, benches, your typical streetscape furnishings, but some of the other specialty amenities that we see in and around the village today that can be incorporated are things like streetscape banners. We have a great program just in the lot here we've seen every time we come by. So there's great opportunity to build those things in to kind of bump up that aesthetic level and kind of tie up the whole room together. So we included a couple images and the pricing we kind of factored in, banner arms and electrical receptacles for holiday lighting. And there's all sorts of possibilities in terms of what you can accomplish. It's just a matter of knowing what you want, and you need to build that into the infrastructure, the fixtures, the poles, the receptacles and all that, because you can't add it later, and no matter what you do, unless you're stringing power cords across sidewalks, and I'm sure you don't want that liability. So, moving right along, we're just showing a typical 80-foot spacing on the lights, 40-foot spacing on the trees, and again, that'll get adjusted as needed based on pole heights and illumination requirements and all that stuff. But, okay. Ornamental trees and some of the smaller medians, accents, and some a little bit of pizzazz. But again, here, you see where we've maintained just a lawn terrace where it makes sense in adjacent park-like development and parcels. And I think on the last row down, we're indicating a little bit of accent here. These are some more commercial uses, so we felt it made sense to kind of recommend some of that treatment here. Crosswalks identified with some decorative pavement as well. And then the commercial finishes its way, and I believe this is the future potential, was it a brewery of sorts? Or, that ties in nicely with what's going on at this piece. And then we make our way down and head toward that nice new bridge you guys enjoyed. And then what we did at this last piece was kind of, as an introduction coming from the north, just to kind of coin this corridor with some of those nice finishes at these particular intersections and kind of welcome you into the piece. So that's my quick run through of this, and what we can do is jump to the amenities board, and I can just I'll talk through what I'm showing and why, and just kind of explain what. Again, we're not recommending any specific types, but we just want to show you a smattering of alternatives to consider in terms of benches. There's gazillion kinds. There's contemporary and modern. There's park-like and a little more classic historic. I'm showing a wood slatted bench on the upper left, and then to the right of it is the same model, but in all metal. So you can get nice, soft, comfortable wood seats, which I recommend in winter. Nobody wants to sit on a cold iron steel bench. A lot of them come in aluminum as well, so you don't have rust issues. The frames and things like that, they're powder coated ceilings. So the far left two benches are kind of from one particular manufacturer. The next two over are a little bit more contemporary twist, but again, it's the same bench in wood slats versus metal. There's a handful of different colors. You can coordinate light colors with the decorative metal railings and fences we're talking about, the street trees, the frame colors. So that's really an involved exercise, but I think you just have to kind of define what it is you want to be as how you present the village in terms of the aesthetic. Is it kind of a classic vintage village type, or are we trying to be a little more cutting edge and more contemporary or urban looking? And you can be whatever you want to be. There's one for every thought. To complement all those, trash and recycling receptacles kind of tie in. This is the playing well, which goes with this particular bench. That manufacturer offers a family of furnishings. Again, all metal. You can get it in wood, kind of a nice warm. But I will say, over time, all this wood, it shows up nice and dark and brown. But it all patinas to that kind of silvery teak, that boardwalk, beachside sort of silver color. Unless you want to buff it out and finish it every year, which DPW typically doesn't build into.
Oh, yeah.
So there's kind of this family, and then a little more a contemporary twist. There's just a host of alternatives. Same thing goes for bike racks. Next couple photos down below. This is an example of something a little more contemporary looking. They're kind of stainless steel. This, I believe, is like a satin-finished stainless or a nice powder coat custom color. There's what we found to be best in the streetscape are these kind of single post racks, and you can mount two bikes to each. You can space them however you want, and you're not sticking to one 10-bike rack in the middle of nowhere. So these are a great way to kind of pepper the sidewalk with bikes where you need them or where you feel you want them. There's ways to kind of build some custom pieces in. You can get raised letters with the village name or logo or crest. So we're going to just kind of show an example of how all these things are kind of customizable. Benches can come with emblems. I guess before I forget, and while I'm talking about costs, emblems, engraving, and plaques and things like that, when it comes to funding and coming up with creative ways to find money, there's ways to engage groups, community clubs and activities. People can donate and get pavers engraved, and all that can go to help fund some of these improvements as well. So those are the kind of things we can think about as you're trying to figure out how we're going to buy this Cadillac and make this thing roll. So, there's lots of interesting twists on that piece. Another layer of the streetscape amenities aesthetic are decorative plant pots. I believe you guys have some of those in the medians as well that have the annuals and things. It's a great, relatively affordable way to kind of add some more pop at these corners. This is an example of an actual roadway bump out, which we do not have in this case, based on just the narrowness of the corridor and the fact that we need four lanes. But we still have those opportunities at the roadway corners by incorporating that accent paving at each of those opposing corners. So I wanted to show a few different examples of what those could look like. Tons of different styles as well. Roadway, streetscape banners. This is an example of a banner arm that I'm not particularly fond of, and I guess I wanted to show it and address it for this very reason. You got this nice decorative black pole, and it's kind of an afterthought to slap on just a strap-on metal, kind of not very good-looking strap, but There are definitely fixtures available with breakaway arms, so if a truck hits it, they snap and snap right back and don't break off. But some poles can come integral with them. Others, we would definitely look to specify something you just don't see as much as you do here. So, again, here's a picture of what that roadway light's going to look like. Picture banners can come in 2x3, 3x5 or 6. Yeah, I've seen them long, beautiful, but it all depends on the height of the pole, and you usually want to have the bottom of those things at least 8 foot off the ground, vandalism and whatever else goes on at night on the roadway. Just want to keep people away from that. The upper right portion of the board starts to talk about the street trees and what those planters could start to be. And I know Craig made me aware that up in Appleton they have similar conditions where they have some decorative rail and precast planters, or maybe they're cast in place. What we typically like to do is a precast, which is kind of what's shown here. This is Wisconsin Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. It happens to be a honed, polished granite, which I didn't price. I don't think that's behind Cadillac, so I don't know if that's really what we're talking here. But precast concrete comes in colors. You can get it in any profile and shape. We always like to make it unique, but we also like to build in little bumps or skate stop sort of reveals to keep kids from thrashing and grinding along them and soiling them up. But the decorative rail usually is about an 18-inch tall feature, but it's kind of a nice aesthetic finish. Keeps people from tromping through the plants and keeps those things happy. But one thing, given that we're tight to the back of curb with our planters, usually we recommend a 12 to 18-inch gap between back of curb and here. So what we would do is just propose not to have the fencing along the roadside because of snow removal or plowing or any of that. It just makes sense from a maintenance standpoint to not put too much right up against the back of curb. So that's kind of the general character of what those could be. Happy street trees, where those things go. And the accent paving. This is kind of all those roadway corners and crosswalks and terrace areas. I guess the Cadillac or the level A finish would be a paver set over a concrete base that's either sand set or bituminous set, kind of pressed on top. And being in a commercial area and given that trucks and snow removal on sidewalks and things, there's small vehicles driving on it, we always recommend in a commercial setting that they be put in over a concrete base. And bituminous set is the preferred, most durable, longest lasting solution. So that's kind of the way of the industry these days. And they won't settle over time because it's on a solid base. You won't end up with tripping hazards and all those potential liabilities that municipalities have to worry about. So we're showing what is, you can look very closely, these are actually clay brick pavers in the crosswalk. This is actually a concrete paver. They come with a stone sort of surface finish, so it kind of looks like a natural material, but it's concrete. Here it's set at the corner and in the crosswalk as well. This is kind of a better view of that same type of material. Then there's also integral colored concrete, and you can stamp concrete to give it a pattern or a texture. You can expose the air bit like this picture shows. There's a myriad of different colors. This is stamped colored in the terrace. Here's a kind of a close-up example of two finishes. This is your standard broom finish with a picture frame perimeter. That's kind of a nice finish on just a standard broom finish concrete. And then we could look to stamping things either in the terrace. But when you color concrete, it's always good to apply a sealer. And by doing that, you make it a little less gritty and a little more slick. So we don't like to put the stamp patterns. We wouldn't recommend crosswalks or pedestrian areas where we're walking be stamped. It would just be integral color with a texture. It's just a matter of, we found that slippage and the potential for that based on the stamp pattern and smoothing out the texture, it's not ideal. So the terrace areas could be textured and stamped, but these roadway corners would just be a kind of decorative scoring pattern with integral color. And then maybe some of the picture framing, broom finish directions, and things like that. There's ways to kind of illustrify those finishes. This is a picture of just an integral colored concrete in a solid color. So it still pops. You see that you're about to cross something. It's a lot of visual. There's really no physical means of calming traffic in the current plan. There aren't bump outs or raised pedestrian crossings or speed humps or speed bumps or any of that stuff, but just the fact that we're putting color across the road should be a visual cue that helps announce the fact that this is a pedestrian zone. They'll see the finishes along the sides, and it's a step in the right direction toward embracing the safety factor. So I think from that standpoint, that's kind of the brief overview of all the potential opportunities, but it's just exciting to me to see it go from what it is today and thinking about what it could be and working with the group, and it sounds like there's some good positive energy and support for the project, so we're excited to see it moving forward. And if you guys have other specific questions or anything like that, be happy to address.
Any questions?
Just maybe your experience, you talked about land acquisition, even though it's a few feet, I'm assuming, on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a little of everything along there. There's some commercial, there's some vacant, there's some, I don't think there's any residential, per se.
A school,
and a condo. And in your experience, is that a difficult process?
There's no easy way to go about it, honestly. Because every parcel is a different owner with a different agenda and a whole different... some people are real resistant to any government, period. Not in my pocket, but I do believe from some of the corridor studies that the public is already engaged in this process. And from what I've heard from Tanya and our planners who have kind of facilitated that, it's been a pretty positive experience so far. But... you never know who you're going to end up with, fighting back. But
well, it seems, the whole bike pedestrian community, I think we have some representatives here. I think we've got a lot of support there, and I think a lot of the property owners would be supportive of that. So hopefully that part wouldn't be overly difficult.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's a complicated process for sure, definitely.
Any questions? Comment?
One quick question. I don't know if Eric, you'll know this off the top of your head, or if Craig, you'll know. The business that started just south of St. Joseph, the chiropractic center, I know they were looking for, as we plan, to see if we can get accommodations for southbound entry. That's been taken into account. I think I saw that on the plan, but I just want to make sure.
Let me comment on that just briefly, and let me see if we can bring up the section of Webster on the north end.
Yep, that's what it looks. I think you just had it.
If you notice the roadway and where the median is, a lot of it is striped rather than a raised median. And so that's the old Village Hall site, and you can see, if you remember the site plan for the Zambaldi, there was some limitations on access. Well, then here they're basically removed. It's a center median that's striped, so you'll be able to go either way on that median. So any one specific location, like the chiropractic center, we would have to look at that in more detail. But the idea is to go with more of a striped median in some areas rather than raised, to improve the access, and we can certainly do that.
Okay, thank you. That's what I needed to hear.
And I think they're promoting their entrance off of St. Joe's behind the bank there. They got some signage down there, so you can kind of come in from the back side there. Maybe that's been helping.
Yeah.
Any other questions or thoughts? I have one, Eric. Mm-hmm. You've obviously done this in other municipalities. Do you have any before and after pictures of any communities that have done this?
Yes. I can dig a few up and send them along.
That would be interesting.
Well, one in particular is in Muskego, just south and east of Milwaukee. They had a typical 2- and 4-lane just roadway with swale ditches on the side, and it went to a 4-lane with a median, turf terrace, sidewalks, and then there was a whole commercial district, which got intensified with all the pavers and accents and things. And I think the community, you know, really rallied around the night and day reality that what they ended up with is something that's a lot safer, a lot better looking, and, you know, something to be more proud of. And the development has just ramped up exponentially since that went in first. It was kind of built it and
so it has.
Came along. There's lots of great case studies. I can make a note and dig up a few and send some pictures along.
That would be great, especially from an economic development perspective. In part, that's why we're looking into this. A, we want to look nice, but we also want to make an exciting corridor for businesses to want to do business in Illinois. And the thought I know is for that to happen. So if you have any use cases, that would surely help us down the road.
Yeah, and there's nothing really presentation quality comparisons. Yep. It's just some pictures of before and after. Yep. It goes a long way, just taking a look and seeing the reality. So.
Sure.
If you recall in some of the previous discussions that we had about this project, we will now look at the costs in more detail and do some refinements to the concept to try to nail down some details and get a budgetary cost for what a project would actually be. And part of that is going to be interfaced with Brown County Highway Department, because the street portion of the project, that's going to take place whether or not we do a development project. So we will be interfacing with Brown County in terms of the basic concept, and then what we see the cost being for refurbishing the roadway itself. And then we'll look at this in a little bit more detail, and we'll work with Eric on this about all the streetscape things and what do we think this is really going to cost us to do this. Our target is by the end of the year or so to have the basic plan and the cost for this, and then you can look at that and decide, what do we want to do at this point? Is this something that we want to continue to pursue? So that's kind of the timetable, is in the next couple of months try to nail down more of those details and come up with a cost, and then we can decide where we go from there.
Okay, great.
But this gets us the basic concept, and you can see kind of what it would look like, and we can kind of work from there, and you know, you can get a good view of what this is and what you might think you really want to accomplish. Is this something you really want to do? One of the other things that Trevor just reminded me of is, you know, we're always concerned about the speed of the automobiles and the trucks in the area. When you do this type of thing, the landscaping, the medians, and so forth, you are going to slow the traffic down on that roadway. So that will help with that issue.
Okay. And you mentioned the, you know, it could align with the reconstruction of Webster. Yes. And a question I would have, if that's the case, say by the cemetery, can we move the roadway to allow for the terrace and then the sidewalk, you know, have a dip a little bit or curve to the east, which is a question I'm sure at design time.
Sure. Yeah.
But that would be an opportunity if we were going to do that.
There's probably a couple of options there in terms of what we could do. It does get a little more complex when you're dealing with a cemetery.
Yeah.
But it still is workable to do something to still preserve that for a road width. Yeah. So that would be something we would look at.
Okay. Any other thoughts? Any questions for Eric?
Just a question. Are you looking at opening this up for general public for any questions?
We have a few minutes. I would entertain a motion.
I'll make that motion.
Trustee Genrich, seconded by Trustee Dart. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. Is there anyone in the audience who has a question? Mr. Matuza.
You may.
Please.
That was me, sorry.
My voice.
Creaking and cracking.
If you're listening. Very frankly, you know me, I'm known for candor. I'm going to take quite a bit of convincing to get in favor of this whole thing, because my question was, what is the overall goal of the plan and what is the overall benefit of the village? I'm not been told that yet. I also recommend, beyond what has been done so far, that before you would move to spend a lot of money on this project, that you get extensive listening sessions, opinion surveys, perhaps even a referendum. And just a side note, I mentioned banners. My personal opinion is that some banners can actually be aesthetic pollution, in my opinion. I think you've got to be very careful what you do with that. Mm-hmm. And beyond the cost of the project itself, you will be incurring some minor additional costs in maintaining these waste containers, the benches, and so forth. So that's my say for moment. I can be convinced, you know that. But I'm a little pessimistic. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Because of the dollars, of course.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to ask a question? Come on up.
Good evening. Heather Gentry, 249 Kenny Street, resident and bike advocate. I heard you discuss earlier on that the south end of this project was narrow. Where exactly is that and why?
It's just a cemetery. This is where it abuts the existing cemetery. It's on the west side of the road at the south end.
South end of the project ends.
All of this frontage, these gray stones and everything are so close to the existing walk, we had to keep that in place, and we narrowed the width of the right of way.
So that would really pinch any kind of bike facilities being along as possible?
Well, we're still showing the continuous bike lanes on both sides.
Okay. I guess for the record, I would state that obviously we're in full support of striped bike lanes because they are safer than just markings like a person in a bike on the road. Drivers perceive non-striped bike lanes as a wider traffic lane, and speeds increase. I will say that with the vegetation always slows down traffic, as well as striped bike lanes slows down traffic. And I'm sure you remember our discussions on Riverside Drive. I heard from several of you that you didn't want to put bike lanes on Riverside Drive because it just wasn't safe. Here's our chance to have safe bike lanes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jim O'Rourke, 2339 Oakwood Avenue. I was the co-chair for the Bike Ped Committee, in charge of pedestrian issues. I do have a question as far as we should have a ballpark figure on how much this thing is going to cost just right out of the chute, how much the Cadillac costs, and then you can pare it down from there. I would suggest that we go ahead and ask, just do a survey right away of all the property owners. That would probably take 2 or 3 days, and ask them if they'd be willing to give up, you know, maybe 4 or 5 feet of their frontage. I think the going rate right now, according to the assessor, is about $7 a square foot for that land. It's as low as, you know, $3 or $4, but I think that the assessor has it at $7 a square foot. So that's what I would do before I move forward, is I would talk to the diocese, I would talk to everybody that's got some land that you want, tell them that they have so many square feet, and ask them if they'd be willing to donate it, or in worst case, eminent domain, and you take it at $7 a foot. Thanks.
Time for one more.
I'm Becky Nyberg, and I live at 214 Simonette Street, and I was on the Bicycle and Pedestrian Committee, and I'm really happy to see that you're taking into account a lot of the things that are in the new plan. And I also wanted to say there is the kind of the elephant in the room of the new state law that was passed, that you can't use eminent domain for bicycle and pedestrian facilities, and so I really think that you need to get out ahead of it and convince the property owners that, you know, it's the right thing to do for the business district. And if you weren't able to get the right of way, I would like to make sure that it's scaling it back across all of it, that we don't that maybe we go with 10-foot lanes for the cars, and maybe we go with a 5-foot sidewalk, and maybe, you know, that everything gets treated equally, and you don't just drop one part of it to say, well, you know, we don't have enough right of way, let's drop sidewalks. That it should be fairly and equally spread out across it. And I know that the new studies show the 10-foot lanes really slow down traffic even more, and they're talking 11-foot lanes. So there is that possibility of gaining that extra, you know, footage in there. So, but I'm really happy with the plan. I'm really happy to see that the things with the bicycle and pedestrian plan are moving forward. Thanks.
Thanks, Becky. Okay, well, Eric, thank you very much for being here tonight. Thanks to you and your staff for your hard work. Any other questions from the board? Should we pick up the rules? Trustee Harris, seconded by Trustee Dart. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. I will accept the motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Trustee Genrich, seconded by Trustee Dart. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion passes. Thank you.